بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We often hear the hadith مثل الذي يذكر الله والذي لم يذكر الله كمثل الحي والميت. The simile of the person that remembers Allah Ta'ala and the one that doesn't remember Allah Ta'ala is that of the living and the dead. One person was traveling to meet his peer, his sheikh. So en route, he rested under a tree. He's listening to the birds talking to themselves. One bird is speaking to the other bird. It's a very strange person. He's going to meet his peer while his peer has died already. He goes further, goes and meets his sheikh, and he's surprised that the birds, they are talking about the sheikh being dead. And here I see him alive. So he expressed his feelings to the sheikh, saying that now the birds have also learned to speak lies. What happened? What happened? So the sheikh asked, or more or less, at what time this had happened. So he showed him, more or less, this is the time this had happened. So, well, the birds weren't speaking a lie. Around that time, I was negligent. I was unmindful of Allah Ta'ala at that time. What the birds were saying was exactly correct. It was perfect. There was no wrong in what they were saying. I was unmindful of Allah Ta'ala at that time. Sometimes when we hear about the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala and zikr, then we are restricted to holding a tasbih and reciting something. We cannot underestimate this zikr as well, the one that we are doing, pulling the tasbih, or even unmindful, we cannot underestimate it, because all these things accumulate, and when they reach a certain point, then you see its value. You may not see the value straight away, but it has a value, and you will only see the value after it's reached a certain point. There is a famous incident of a person coming to a sheikh. He came there, he stayed a week or so, and then the sheikh had given him ijazat, khilafat, etc. And he's gone back. In the meanwhile, the murids that are around in the khanqa, they are speaking amongst themselves that we are here, sitting here for years, and nothing is happening for us. This person came in, he lived here for a week or 2 weeks, and then he's gone, and he's gained what he needed to gain. So it seems like the sheikh is not paying attention to us. Yeah, do hafte mein unka kaam to ban gaya. In just 2 weeks, and he got working. And here we are here, sitting here for years, and nothing is happening for us. We're not getting connection. We're not getting the type of relationship that he's got in 2 weeks. When rumors go around, then the walls also have ears. See, one person says it to the other, the second to the third, and eventually you get to know what's going on. So somehow the sheikh got to know that this is what they are discussing. So the sheikh asked them, see, heave some wood. See that tree there, it's a moist, fresh branch. So just cut that thing and bring it to me. Brought it fresh, moist. Try to light it up, but it won't light up. It's moist and green. How is it going to light up? He says, all right, see that other tree that has dried out already for a couple of good years. Break that and bring it. He brought that in. In a moment, that thing just struck. Started burning. So the sheikh says, see, this person that came in, he's like this tree here. The moist of temptation is gone out of him. The moisture of shaitan and shaitanic influences have all dried out. All that moisture of temptation, haram, lust, shaitan, all that has gone out has dried out of him. When all has dried out, so it was just a matter of striking. And when we strike, when we struck, and he lit up. So everything was dried in him. He didn't have the temptation. He didn't have the type of lust. He didn't have the type of feelings that a normal person will have. Everything has dried out. You don't see that anger in him now. You don't see the type of craving for wealth like people generally have. You don't see him running after haram, chasing after wealth. You don't see him doing it. Everything has dried out in him. So when everything has dried out in him, it was just a matter of connecting, lighting him up. So we just struck the match and then he lit up. See? As far as you people are concerned, you are that first branch. You are still very moist. Moist with temptation. You turn the digit from 1 million to 10 to 10 to billion. You know, continue, you see. So the moisture of temptation is still strong in you. You're still very, very wet. Shaitanic influences are very strong in you. Moist of temptation is in you. Shaitanic influences are in you. So for you to ignite is going to take some time. You have to dry all this thing out. But don't worry now. That as you are working in the right direction, then you are drying out. Gradually. It may not happen overnight, but it will take some time. Eventually you will dry out. But for you to dry out, you need to be consistent. You have to continue. You have to carry on. Be focused. Eventually, you will come to a point, okay, where this person has reached, you will reach also. But the need is that you remain focused. Expose yourself to that fire, okay, of love. Expose yourself to that fire that will dry out that temptation, that will dry out the shaitanic influences, that will dry out that craving, that unnecessary craving for wealth. So this thing will dry it out. When it dries out, then you will also burn, like how this person is burning, you will also burn. So you want that fire of love. You want to be connected to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So, inshallah, you are working in that direction. But because that moisture has gone very deep into yourself, it's gone right deep into your heart, into your system, now that thing has to be taken out. When it's taken out, then you'll find yourself also in the same position. So when we talk about zikr and the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala, then this is how we restrict it to. See? Whereas zikr has got a deeper meaning, and many, we don't take the time to find out the deeper meaning of zikr. Now look at it. This entire universe, this whole system that Allah Ta'ala created, millions of systems within the universe, right? But all the systems are subject to the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. As long as there is one single soul that is taking the name of Allah Ta'ala, all these systems will continue. And the moment that person doesn't remain, there's no more of that person, then this world will also terminate, it's ended up. It will cease to function. That is as far as the entire universe with all its systems, right? As far as other creations besides the insan, then there are two hadiths about their continuity and how they live, right? One hadith says that just as there is an angel to take away the soul of men, then there is an angel to take away the soul of animals as well. Right? There's a famous incident of Sir Sayyid, the founder of Aligarh University, and Mawlana Abdul Haysab Laknavi Rahmatullah, the famous muhaddis. So Sir Sayyid, he meant well. But just that his understanding was all lopsided. Almohad Thanvi Sahib Rahmatullah used to say, Humare nadan dost hai. He's a friend, a little bit stupid. He wants to do the right thing, but he doesn't have the brain. Though he is the founder of the university, in that respect, did something good. But he didn't know what he was doing about Islam, how he was presenting it, etc. complicating matters. He didn't know the type of confusion that he was creating. See, he is coming around 1860. The Sayyid is coming around 1860. That's where he came up to popularity, etc. So now 1860 is just before the mutiny in India, 1857, where the English had massacred numerous Muslims, thousands of Muslims had massacred, hung them up on trees. To take out your own father that was hanging on the tree was a big crime. You will be killed just for taking out his body from the tree. So thousands of Muslims were massacred at the time. Now, Sir Sayyid had two concerns. Okay, I mustn't, in this whole commotion, I mustn't get killed as well. Number one. And number two is, how do I curry favor with the English? See? If I curry favor with the English, then perhaps I can do something for the Muslims. I need to see that I'm in good books with them. So I need to be playing a little bit of a balancing act. I'm good with them, and I'm good for the Muslims as well. For the cause of the Muslims, I'm good. And I'm good with the English. Because they are the ruling party. When they are the ruling party, if I'm bad with them, bad books, then I can't get any favors. How can I secure any favors for the Muslims? So like you had that type of thinking in that zamana, you get the same type of thinking that's present in this day as well. Say, right, we have to live in this world, so we have to be good with these people here as well, so that we get our things worked out, right? And you have to be good for the cause of Islam as well. So now you're playing a balancing act. So in that balancing act, what will happen is many a things that the government will say, you'll have to make it look Islamic. If they talk about photography, then you'll say, you know, photography is right. If they talk about gender equality, you'll have to say that gender equality is right. Whatever they talk about, you'll have to make it look correct. And why you have to make it look correct? So that you don't get unpopular with the government. You need to be popular with the government. If you're going to talk anything that is against the interests of the government, obviously it's going to be disastrous. So you have to work a plan now. You have to become the yes man. They say, you know, in India in the old days, so you had this type of yes men, you see. Well, these people that were more wealthy, more affluent, influential, so they used to have this yes men around with them. Their friends, whatever they say, whatever stupid thing will come to their minds, and they got the yes men around, so the yes men will just support whatever they are saying. So obviously when it's an influential person now, he'll have to show out himself, you know, such a powerful person, such a good person. So now he's trying to impress upon the friends that are around, saying, you know, yesterday I went out hunting, you know. We're saying, the Nawab is saying, I went out hunting, and whilst I was there on the hunting spree, I spotted a good sized deer, you know, from the distance. And the deer, when I shot the thing, it broke the thing's hoof, and it bust its head. Now, friends that are around say, hey, but the hoof and the head, you know, two different worlds apart now. How did this ever happen? How can it ever happen? The hoof, it broke the hoof and bust the head. Now you got the yes man around. But the yes man has to support him. No matter what stupid thing he says, so much, you know, how impossible it must have been. But you have to get this yes man around. So he has to say something. No, he says, Nawab sahab, what you're saying is 100%. See, people that come and praise you, they just be a little bit suspicious about them. Because you don't know, they're praising you, they got some matlab, they got some objective, some agenda. See. So nothing comes for free. They're praising you and they want something in return. Sometimes it happens that they praise us, oh, you know, Mora, you're so pious and we didn't see a person like you, etc., etc. But we don't know what is the ulterior motive. It's something behind this. I don't say everybody is like that, but you get a percentage of people that are like that as well. So anyway, he says, no, you know, he broke the hoof and he bust the head. So this yes man has to say, he says, no, what you're saying is 100%. There's no doubt about it. So, yeah, exactly, I seen the whole thing. You know what was happening at that time? The deer was, it took his leg and was crushing his head. So that thing. So you get this type of class of people. You get the same, this Aligarh University and Sir Sayyid and We had a lot of people around that time. If you look at Nusratul Khawatir, that is Indian history, right? You will find these people here and how they worked, right? The intentions must have been right, but they were corrupt. In their thinking, they didn't know that. They were confusing, complicating things. They didn't know what they were doing. Like, for example, you see this Aligarh University, the head of it, right? So Sayyid. So he says that Muslims, Christians, Jews, all are on the right path. They're all on the right path. It's just that it's different. It's a different version. He's got a different version. This is a different version. This all are the same. But just that their version is different. This person's version. So all are Jannatis. That's what he was implying. See? Now what dangerous statements they made. Very dangerous statements they made. Although ulama-i-kiram were very careful, very apprehensive in declaring anybody as kafir, but they made very dangerous statements. All are about the same. It is just a different color. So why did he have to say this type of statement? He had to make this type of statement because this was just after the war that took place. So it came after the war. So when he says that we are all alike, we are all the same, then is there a need to fight against them? There's no need to fight against the Christian now because we and them are all the same. We're following one religion. Our religion is the right religion. We're all the same, following the same religion. Is there a need to fight them? Now, this class of people, they don't understand that when you're going to be currying favor with others, they will take from you. You will absorb yourself into them. And they will never absorb themselves into you. You will go into them, but you will not see them compromising. You will see one of our people wearing a suit, boot and tie, right? But you see them wearing kurta and topi and turban. You see them doing it, unless they have accepted Islam. But very... it's not a strange thing to see. Very casual. And you feel respected. Hey, what a brand name. I'm going to show it also. Reebok. I'm going to show it. So who are we identifying with? Are we identifying with the right class? Are we identifying with something that we can be proud about of our religion, about our deen, etc.? Or are we identifying with the wrong class? So sometimes this corruption... It becomes so strong, the force of corruption becomes so strong that we don't even realize that we're getting absorbed into this net. Become part of them, we begin to think like them, we begin to reason like them, we begin to behave like them. Everything of theirs becomes appealing. Everything that belongs to us doesn't have an appeal. Things that belong to them has an appeal. Look at it, such a strange thing, right? You wear this topi, it's such a thing of respect, right? So that topi doesn't have an appeal. But you wear one of those caps, right? You'll pay 50 rand, 100 rand for that cap. And you will take it as a thing of symbol. 200 rand, Reebok, Nike cap I've got. Right? Someone tells you that wear this topi, it's more close to the sunnah. It's only 50 rand. Hey, 50 rand. You must pay 50 rand for this one simple topi like this. But that cap there is 200 rand, 300 rand. You want to identify with them. So you get absorbed into that culture. We are talking about the Sayyid and what damage they have done, you see. So I say their niyat was right. If you look at them, the other side of their lives, right? And you look at this Sayyid, one person, it's the time of the English, right? So he's looking for a job in a government department, very senior government department, he's looking for a job. So he has to give in his CV. At the interview, he says, you know who I am? I am the son-in-law of Sir Sayyid. So the English is recognizing him. Because he's talking in favor of the English. So they already gave him a title of Sir. That Sir came after he played their tune, you see. He played the tune, so they gave him a title. So by them, nothing comes for free. You have to do something, some contribution, some service. Then you become a Sir, sometime you become a doctor. So you have to play that tune, and thereafter you get that type of a title. They recognize you. So he played the tune very well, and he got that recognition. But they put him above the head. See? So I say his intention may have been good, but poor chap, he lost it. It's corrupt, you see. His thinking was corrupt. So he's gone for this interview. This person has gone for that interview. So they ask him, who are you, etc. Finding out his credentials. You know who I am? I'm Sir Sayyid's son-in-law. In the meanwhile, the English now, very discreetly, the one that is interviewing, if you went and phoned up or something, whether it's telegram or phone or something, he's contacted Sayyid, this person here, this is his name, and he says that he is your son-in-law. Is it a fact? He said, yes, and you better see that you give him the job. Anyway, he confirmed the job, everything is working very well. About 2-3 years later, he went to Sir Sayyid to offer a token of appreciation. You know, what you did for me, I couldn't get the job, the type of wage, the type of salary, the type of perks and benefits. I would have never got it. But you gave the recommendation, I got it already. See? So the English were looking for this type of people, you see. Why? They didn't want a confrontation with the Muslim. Because they got India from the Muslims. So the Muslim was the greatest threat. When the Muslim was the greatest threat, they needed to suppress him. So if they got some people that are speaking their language, then it's easy then, say, your own man, and see what he's talking about. See? It's your own man, and see what he's talking about. It's not nice to talk about politics in this type of a forum, but just for you to understand how they work. See? Because what happens to us, is any radio program, anything that we hear, we take it to heart, believe it, and we take it like the gospel or the divine truth. Anything that we hear. Now, yesterday someone was telling me that they were listening to some radio programs, Hajis are coming back. So there's some person that is being interviewed over some Islamic radio. Say, Hajis, what a beautiful experience. And people asking him questions and all that. So see, you all are following an Indian version of Islam, you know. I went to the Haram Sharif, the peak Hajj crowd, you know. And then the Muslim men and women, they're performing namaz together. What a beautiful experience, you know. Men and women, shoulder to shoulder, they're performing namaz. And what a beautiful experience. See what he's talking about. What trash he's talking about, and he's getting an applause for that. Applause for that. But see how corrupt their minds are. Now this is not an isolated case. You think it's an isolated case. 3-4 weeks back, someone else came. And he came in a deep state of depression. See, I was listening to a program, I was not feeling too well, so I said, let me just listen to the program, and let me relax a little bit. I'm listening to the program, and see, you know, 1 in 1,000 person is going to go to Jannat. 1 in 1,000 person is going to go into Jannat. That was in the time of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. And now, you're lucky if 1 in 100 million is going to Jannat. So when he spoke like this, he said, for about 3 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks before he came to me, I was in a total state of depression because I worked out the mathematics after that, that 1 in 100 million going to Jannat, right? That means if there's 1.5 billion Muslims, then only 15 people will go to Jannat then. And that 15 people will be top awliya, buzuganadin, ulama, etc. We don't stand a chance. Though. What's the need of all this? That person actually's words were, what the hell? Nauzubillah. But he was in a state of frustration, despondency, and he says, what's that? You know. Whereas he's a 5-time namazi, he reads Quran every day. But now, that one bayan that he heard there, and he turned his mind around, and he says, what's the hell? But you see this type of radio messages, and the corruption that it brings to the mind. By Islam is easy, it's a simple, straightforward, clean religion. Now, Abu Zuganadin are telling you simple, straightforward things, but do it. Why must we go and listen to this type of complicated things that will complicate and confuse our minds? They're saying straightforward things, clear things. One is saying now, performing namaz with women shoulder to shoulder, what a beautiful experience. One is saying that if nobody is going to Jannah, only 15 people out of the whole world is going to Jannah. Everybody else is dispatched to Jahannam. So all these hadiths that went from here, a couple of thousands, what they went? They went and wasted their time. So this type of a mission is nothing new. It's old. It's carrying on from long. When we were children, I remember, there used to be a paper that used to be circulated. Some Sheikh Ahmad from Medina Munawara, and he had a dream, you know, that so many people have died in this week here. And from this so many people that have died, only 2-3 people went to Jannah. Everybody else is Jahannam. So now that's Sheikh Ahmad had this dream from Medina Munawara. Now who is Sheikh Ahmad? Nobody knows. And then the news after that is that whoever reads this, he must circulate this. 1,000 copies and he must circulate it, right? If he doesn't circulate, some bad luck is going to come to him. So what he's conveying is conveying two messages. That you people are wasting your time in Islam. All of you all are dispatched to Jahannam, whether you try, do whatever. See, if so many people, thousands of people must have died. Only three people got thrown into Jannat. So what are you doing wasting your time in Namaz, Huzur, Roza, Zakat, going out in Hajj, going out for 4 months, giving out in the path of Allah? What are you wasting your time? Enjoy your life, continue. You're wasting your time. That's the one message. And the second message that he was throwing out was Islam, not a serious religion. It's just on doubt, suspicion, some dreams, some experiences. This is all Islam about. So don't take it serious. This is the message that he was giving out. But then our people read everything and anything. Anything and everything. We feel we got that computer, our mind can read between the lines and we'll get it right. But strangely, the more intelligent people get caught into this thing, these traps. Simple people, they carry on. Oh, they must go for 3 days in the month, go out gush, etc. Carry on with your life. They'll be consistent in that effort of this. And the more intelligent class, they get caught into this. So read namaz, shoulder to shoulder with woman. What a beautiful experience. So what was the beautiful experience about? I ask, what is the experience about? There can't be any other experience but the lust that he was going through whilst being next to that girl. Is there any other experience? There was no other experience but the lust. Alright, a woman now, she's next door now, and then you see the toes now, how it looks. See this and how it looks. Right. That's the only thing that must have been in his brains. Nothing else in his mind. What else could have been in his mind? That was the beauty of that experience. But all the women are giving him an applause, they're clapping and they're enjoying, you know, what he's talking about, what he's saying. But really, which direction is he taking you? Now there's so many hadiths to show that women must be totally segregated from men. So many. This morning I was teaching the Dora class. So Nabi Sallam is instructing the men, but you see, in the time of Nabi Sallam, women used to come and perform namaz in the masjid, right? So he's instructing the men that let the woman go out first. They've covered a reasonable distance, then you leave the masjid. Now, what was the need for that? If there was a beautiful experience, what was the need for Nabi Sallam to ask the men to stay in the masjid whilst the women have covered a reasonable distance, then they should leave? What was the need? It's common sense. Now, when you talk like this, then you say, no, it's the Indian brand of Islam that you are teaching. Now, that's how they are misconstruing it. What we are teaching is an Indian brand. But the Quran says it's not Indian. The Hadith is not Indian. What we are talking is the Quran and the Hadith. We will say, alright, Abu Zughanuddin said this and whatever, just to support the Quran and the Hadith. But this is coming out directly from the Quran Sharif. Musa alayhi salam has taken asylum in Madian, right? And as he reached Madian, وَجَدَ مِن دُونِهِمُ امْرَأَتَيْنِ تَذُودَانِ قَالَ مَا خَطْبُكُمَا. So he sees two women, and these women are totally distinct. They are apart from the entire crowd. People are grazing the animals, etc. They're all on the one end. And these two women are totally separate from the flock, from the whole crowd, all those shepherds and all that have come in to graze and to water the animals. They are totally separated. So Musa al-Islam sees these two women, and he sees they are in a state of need, right? Because their flocks need to be watered, and they can't water the animals. So what's the problem? So a Nabi has two distinct qualities in him. Every Nabi, one is he will defend the cause of truth. And then the second thing that is very distinct in the Nabi, he will look for the weaker person, to try and help the weaker person. Any person, any situation, he sees the weaker person and he will try and help out. Now he sees that they can't do what the rest of them are doing. So what's your problem? مَا خَدْبُكُمْ What's your problem? So we don't mix up with the men. We wait for the men to take the water and to leave. After they have left, then whatever is left over, then we water our animals with that. Now, is this an Indian version of Islam? It's a Quranic version. Now this Quranic version was coming in from the Quran Sharif, that also becomes Indian when you talk like this. But when you talk like a European, mixing up and gender equality, etc., then it sounds Islamic. So that which is in your home, that sounds Indian, it sounds backwards. That which is alien and foreign to Islam, that sounds Islamic to you. So really, it's not Islam. It's an English mentality that has overwhelmed, it has corrupted your mind. That has corrupted the mind. So whatever sounds English, that is Islamic. And whatever doesn't sound English or doesn't sound Western It must sound Western for the acceptance of your mind. If it doesn't sound Western, then it's not accepting, not appealing to your mind. So we're talking about zikr and we moved on, right? I say that the entire universe is subject to the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. And I spoke about animals. Animals, there are two hadiths. One hadith says that they die, either by the malaika taking away their souls. This way I explained about Sir Sayyid and Mawlana Abdul Hayy Laknavi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali. They met up in the train, right? Now Sir Sayyid got his dog. So, Abdul Hayy Laknavi Sahib Rahmatullah Ali is an alim. His duty is to correct. If there's a wrong, he must correct it. Said, Ajeeb kisam ka aadmi, strange person. You being a Muslim and you carrying a dog around, what's wrong with you? So Sir Sayyid looked at him and he says, you know, I've heard from ulama that where there is a dog, then there won't be angels around. Right? Where there's going to be a dog, then there isn't going to be angels around. Dogs, where there are going to be photos of animate objects, then there's not going to be angels around. So it's true that angels won't be around, but which type of angels? The angels of Rahmat won't be around. The angels that will support you, that will assist you, that will prompt you in the right direction, that will prompt you and encourage you towards righteousness, those angels will leave you. And the angels of wrath and anger will be with you. Right? So the angels of Rahmat are not around. So he is mentioning this to Mawlana Abdul Hayy Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh. So Mawlana Abdul Hayy Sahib Rahmatullah Alayh had to answer him according to his level now. Bring him right to his level. And he says to him, but there must be some angel that is appointed to take away your soul, isn't it? The person that is a sinner, there must be some angel that is appointed to take away his soul. And by the same token, there must be an angel to take away the soul of this dog. So the angel that is appointed to take away the soul of this, of yourself, will also take away, the angel that is appointed to take away the soul of the dog will take away your soul as well. The angel that is appointed to take away the soul of this dog will take away your soul as well. When he heard this answer, he got shocked up, he got shaken up. That angel that is going to take away the soul of the dog is going to take my soul as well. But he couldn't work it out. This person here, he doesn't seem like a normal alim. He's above the rest, you see. So yes, but are you Mawlana Abdul Hayy Sahib? Then Mawlana Abdul Hayy Sahib says, but are you Sir Sayyid? That was the first introduction. So his intention may have been right, but mentally he was confused, complicated, you see. Now many times it happens, these people that are on the fence, they are trying to do good, right? But because they don't have a clear vision of Islam, a clear understanding, they're giving their own stories, you see. When they're giving their own story, they confuse people. Now, when they confuse people, the people say, but he's doing so much of good. He says so much good about Islam. But they don't realize that they are confusing and complicating people. What they are supposed to be doing is just work for the cause of Islam. Don't talk for Islam. There are people that are educated, that specialized, that worked in that department, they will do that work. Yes, you work for the cause of Muslims, don't you mix up this with this. One person is asking me yesterday that, but Islam has to say a lot of things about, lot about farming as well. So what Islam has to talk about farming? So I can understand the person's background now. He wants to do farming, so he wants a little bit of support. I say, buddy, don't talk that type of language. See, in any situation, there is a main cause, and there is a cause that is done by the way, right? It's a need, it's fulfilled, right? So one is the main cause, and one is just a need that is fulfilled, right? Like for example, you come into a madrasa, so the main cause, the main objective of that madrasa is what? To teach you deen, isn't it? So when you come to a madrasa, you won't ask what is the fazilat of eating, what type of food you must eat, what is halal, what is not halal, and how much you eat, all that. So will you talk about that?
Say, but you lost the plot now. Here you have come to educate yourself. You didn't come to eat here. You want to know all the fazilat of eating dates or zaytun and olives, etc., etc. So as though your whole focus has changed from studying deen to eating. So when you come into this world, your whole objective is the service to Allah Ta'ala. Farming is done or business is done just as they need. Now you want to know all the fazilat about farming, etc., as though you've been created to do farming. So that's the need that you have. Every person has some need to see to his requirements, to fulfill his requirements. He needs to do some business or the other. But now to make this an important part of Islam, that's confusing the whole thing. Otherwise everybody will say, there's a need for a businessman, there's a need for a carpenter, Islam got something about farming, Islam got something about medicine. But forget all that, that's just your need, your physical need. Your actual objective is the cause of Islam. That's the actual objective. This is by the way. So I say there are two versions. One is this, that there is an angel that is appointed to take away the soul of other creatures as well. But the other version is that when that creature, it stops its zikr. When its zikr stops, then its soul is taken away. Like you hear that animal is hunted who has terminated its zikr. The person is going fishing, so you must understand when that fish has terminated its zikr, it's coming into the net. Coming onto you. Which one is coming onto your hook? It has terminated its zikr. As long as it's in zikr, it's alright. But the moment it's terminated, it's gone. Khalas. So, everything is subjected to the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. Whether it's the universe, whether it's the animal, whether it's an insect, and in fact your spiritual life as well. When the hadith is speaking about the simile of a person that is in zikr and not in zikr, then it's giving a simile of a life and a dead person. For your physical, to sustain yourself physically, you need three things, right? To be well physically, what you need? You need three things. One is, you need to have the right diet pattern, right? Number two is, you need to do some exercises as well, right? And number three, you require not to stress yourself. All this health fanatics will tell you these three things. What? Right diet pattern. Number two, do the right exercises. And number three, don't get stressed out. Other things will be by the way, like you see that you're not living in a place that's polluted, etc., etc., but that's by the way. But the three things that is common, everybody will talk about, right diet pattern, do some exercises, and number three, don't overstress yourself. Whatever reason, for your health, for your business, whatever, but don't stress yourself. You'll be killing yourself before your time. Do it, enjoy yourself, sleep nicely, enjoy yourself, balance it out. Right? So that is for your physical maintenance. You need these three things. For your spiritual maintenance, what do you need? You need the remembrance of Allah Ta'ala. That is why the simile that is given is like the one that remembers Allah Ta'ala. He is alive, and the one that doesn't remember Allah Ta'ala, then he is like the dead. Now here, we get ourselves confused. When we get ourselves confused, when we talk of zikr, now, but what do you mean? What do you mean? When we talk of zikr, we talk about the presence, the consciousness of Allah Ta'ala. At any given time, you're conscious of the presence of Allah Ta'ala. When you're conscious of the presence of Allah Ta'ala, with His sifat, in other words, with His might, with His glory, with His authority, with His compassion and kindness. His compassion and kindness, and with His glory and might, with His authority and power. أَقْرَبُ إِلَيْهِ مِنْ حَبْلِ الْوَرِيدِ is closer to you than your jugular. In a second, he can just change you around. In a second, just in a split of a second. If, for example, just one cell in you goes malfunction, right? In a second, you got cancer. Just one cell. So he's controlling every cell in your body. Can you imagine the authority that he got? Can you think of any person that's got so much of control? Every cell that is functioning in your body, he's in control, that it's functioning well. And if there's a malfunction, well, finished, you're gone. Now that thing is going so rapidly in your body, doctors can't control that cancer. See? So he's controlling everything. Everything is supreme control. Right. So to remember Allah Ta'ala with that level of mind, that level of presence of mind, He is above me and He is seeing me. So when you remember Allah Ta'ala with that presence of mind, then it's virtually impossible for you to slip into a wrong. You slip into a wrong when you don't have that level of remembrance. وَالَّذِينَ إِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً أَوْ ظَلَمُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ ذَكَرُوا اللَّهِ. So when they come into dhikr, then they come into istighfar, etc. Then they go on the right. إِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً أَوْ ظَلَمُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ ذَكَرُوا اللَّهِ. But when the dhikr of Allah Ta'ala wasn't in their minds, then they fell and they slipped into a wrong. So what was the cause of you slipping into the wrong? You didn't have the consciousness of the presence of Allah Ta'ala at that time. You didn't have the consciousness of the magnitude of Allah Ta'ala at that time. That was the cause, that was the catalyst for you to drop in. If someone has got a loaded gun, right, and you know he's hot-tempered, right? He's very hot-tempered, he's short-fused. The right word is short-fused, not even short-tempered. He's short-fused. And his daughter is there. You know, this person here can get very irritated very easily. He's got a loaded gun, he's got the finger on the trigger, and he's already cocked, right? And then, will you flirt with his daughter? At that time, you got the presence of his daughter, you got the presence of his authority, he's powerful, and he's short-fused, right? You won't do this thing. Even if you're doing that, that feeling will die in you. That feeling will be totally dead, because you got the presence of his might, and his authority, his strength. Now that type of zikr you should bring into yourself. The type of presence of Allah Ta'ala you bring in yourself. As the Shaykh writes one incident, it's a youngster, right, extremely beautiful, extremely handsome. As he's going to the masjid, every now and then you're getting girls throwing roses at him. You had this bhajiyas in the past, so you get the bhajiyas presently as well. There's no end of this. Just that the shapes of the bhajiyas are different now, as then. Then it was different. You still that same race, the race is still continuous. So they're throwing roses and what. It's very attractive, extremely attractive they're throwing. Person that is more muttaqi, that he becomes more attractive. He's avoiding and he's resisting. As he's resisting, they're throwing even more towards him, sending messages, etc. Eventually, one day, as he's going to the masjid, one girl cornered him, extremely beautiful. And she says to him that, I want to tell you a million things. But I know you have to race to the masjid, but just listen to me, one thing, just one sentence before you go to the masjid. He says, you know, my love for you is so deep that I can't resist now. I can't, it's irresistible. It's either life or death. Right? In the night I'm thinking of you, in the morning I'm thinking of you. When I put the blanket over me, I'm thinking about you. When I'm eating, I'm thinking of you. So I can't eat, I can't rest. At any given moment, it's just your thoughts. Your thoughts have permeated me such, I can't think, I can't reason, I can't do things of myself. As though I feel that I'm you. So your love has controlled me and possessed me to such a point. Now, for the sake of Allah Ta'ala, have some mercy towards me. Now the boy just remained silent for that moment. And he sped out to the masjid. I can see that he's performing his namaz, but his mind is all shattered, all scattered around. So he comes back home, he writes a letter. Say, Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. And then he says, the first line, that when a person commits a wrong for the first time, then Allah Ta'ala overlooks. He's Ghafoor Rahim. He knows he's created us, with weaknesses. So Allah Ta'ala will forgive for the first time. When he commits the wrong for the second time, a couple of good times Allah Ta'ala will forgive and overlook. But when he continues the wrong, then two, three things will happen. One is this, that he will become disgraced. People will talk about him. That sin then doesn't remain a secret. Then he becomes publicized. Because Allah Ta'ala had covered him. Allah Ta'ala had concealed his mistake. Now he is becoming more and more brazen. He's openly committing the wrong. So that's the first thing that will happen. Now he'll become, Allah Ta'ala will disgrace him. Number two, the second thing that will happen in him is ضَاقَتْ عَلَيْهِمُ الْأَرْضُ بِمَا رَحُبَتْ. The world will become straightened, become constrained. Now you don't feel happy. See? So this is what is called spiritually dead, you see. Everything, you got everything, but you feel you got nothing. Spiritually, you don't feel nice. You don't feel that happiness. You don't feel that satisfaction. You don't feel that ease. You feel constrained. You feel awkward. You feel uncomfortable. Now, this is a result of what? It's not a depression problem. It's not a mental problem. It's a problem with your relationship with Allah Ta'ala. When you snap that relationship, now you snapped. When you snap, now you fell into despondency, constraint, stress, tension. I need to get this thing done. Why is not happening? These people are not playing the game. They're not talking to me rightly. Why aren't things happening? But that constraint is coming from different ways. With all you've got, all the authority, all the power, all the affluence, all the influence you've got, but you still feel tightened. What is this? It's the result of this wrong. But now, you see this youngster here, and what was the cause of him getting guarded and saved? It was the presence of Allah Ta'ala in his mind. Allah Ta'ala is watching. And in spite of the fact that I'm cornered, I can't do anything at this moment, right? I need to escape from this. And he escapes from this, Allah Ta'ala grants him that realization again. You see, this is not the right thing. So he has the heart to write this letter to this girl. إِذَا فَعَلُوا فَاحِشَةً أَوْ ظَلَمُوا أَنفُسَهُمْ ذَكَرُوا اللَّهُ. Now the question, one last question that remains here, is you hear a story on the one end, person is in ibadat all the time, in zikr all the time, and Jibreel Islam is instructed to destroy that village, right? لَمْ يَتَعْمَأَرْ فِيَّ وَجْهُ. That for a moment, when he saw that vice, then he was not concerned about it, right? On the other end, you hear of a story that the person, the preacher is preaching, and in the heat of his preaching, he says that person, Allah Pak will never show mercy to you. Both people died. Allah Pak dispatched the preacher into Jahannam. Said, did you have control and authority over my mercy that you made him despondent and told him that Allah Pak will never bless you? So you go to Jahannam and you go to Jannah because you didn't lose hope of myself. So here the preacher got destroyed. And here the Zakir, the one that was in Ibadat and Zikr, he got destroyed. So what is the common denominator? How both of them got destroyed? Both of them got destroyed because they had no guide. If you look at the common denominator, this person didn't have a guide, that person didn't have a guide, he was doing his own thing. And both of them think we are doing right. But the absence of a guide. See? Had he had the guide would have told him, but this is not right what you are doing. If there's so much of vice, you need to do something. And he will show him steps what he must do, how to rectify the situation. By the same token, the preacher also didn't have a guide. So the importance of a guide. The Sahaba-i-Kiram, as much as they had excelled and progressed, right? But they didn't feel themselves to be self-sufficient, independent of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Small thing is happening out, right? Small thing, a small little thing. They come and report to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, this is how we did it. And they happily and eagerly accepting the advice of Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. Went out, and this is what happened. Abdullah ibn Amr ibn As radiallahu anhu went out, and on the return, he explained to Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam that he had a wet dream. And it was a biting cold night, right? No hot water available. So he made tayammum. But the whole case is presented before Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam. So, that you were in the state of janabat, and you didn't make ghusl, you made tayammum, and you performed the namaz. Yes, I did so. So, why did you so? So he says, Allah Pak says, that, وَلَا تَقْتُلُوا أَنفُسَكُمْ. Don't kill yourselves. I was afraid that I had used that type of cold water in that cold night, where there was no water, no hot water available, I would have killed myself. And Allah Pak says, don't kill yourself. So now, they're giving the total report, complete report before Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and then they are moving accordingly. They're not doing things independently. Now, this is the problem of this day, that we want to do zikr, but the zikr, what appeals to us, how we want to do it. Do it, but how we feel it should be done. Do it, how we think should be done. Think how our reasoning tells us to do that zikr. Yes, do a little bit of zikr of your own. But then report also. You strive, but you report as well. You strive and you report. So you know you're going in the right direction. That energy of yours is taking you in the right direction. Otherwise you're doing zikr, and you don't have a guide. Perhaps sometimes some stray thought may come to your mind, and you're going off the track, and you don't even realize that you're going off the track. Like that person is talking about Hajj, forget Zikr. He's talking about Hajj, right? And right in the Haram Sharif, he's standing beside the woman, and he's finding it to be an exciting experience. See? Now, he's doing Haram right in the Haram Sharif, right in the Mataf, right before the Kaaba Sharif. And doesn't have a guide, he's going completely off. There's thousands of listeners, 55 countries are listening to him. And they don't know that they're going off, he's off, and he's straying them away as well. The importance of a guide. Allah Pak Tawfiq Nasib.